This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN?
Oh,
what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits. Enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform, Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing. You should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
This is iFanboy Media Splode, episode 39, the 80s comedy draft.
I don't know where I'm going, but I sure know where I've been. Hanging on the promises and the songs of yesterday, and I've made up my mind. I ain't wasting no more time. Here I go.
Hello, welcome to iFanboy Media Split, episode 39, the 80s comedy draft. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and I'm here with my co-host, Josh Flanagan.
Hey there.
And Ron Richards.
Hey, fellas.
And we are here because of the patrons over at patreon.com/iFanboy who unlocked this show, even though we don't unlock shows anymore.
Yeah, but it's a legacy unlock.
This is the last episode of Media Split.
No.
This means that you have to do it for the rest of your life, which is the thing that Connor and I have accepted. We're not happy with it, but there's literally nothing we can do about it.
It is what it is.
Hold on.
We're doing it in front of a live studio audience, by the way.
Only Connor is allowed to operate the buttons.
I didn't think that would happen when I press the button, but it did. Oh. I just learned something about it.
Does
works.
Ron have access to the buttons?
No. I do not. Okay, it has been walled
little,
off.
A little that preview is, for what's going to happen in this episode.
That's my preference.
Anyway, what are we talking about? Oh, patrons unlocked the show. Thank you very much. This is our monthly show. We talk about non-comics media, unlike our Pick of the Week show. We talk about comic books. And I don't think there'll be any spoilers for the show, but you never know. Use the show notes. Let's get going. We've got a lot to do. We got a game to play. And let's start off by how we always start the show, what we've been enjoying since we last spoke. Ron, you're going first, not Josh.
So, yes, I'm going first in terms of what I've been watching, what I've been enjoying. And I got to admit, Connor, I don't know. I can't remember if we talked about it in previous shows or not, but I'm closer to finishing the second season of Strange New Worlds on Paramount Plus. And I don't know if you're watching it or have watched it at all, but it might be the best modern Star Trek show, like better than Picard.
People love it. I haven't seen it.
It is so good. And it's so funny is that I didn't watch the first season because I dismissed it because like Discovery ended and season one of Strange New Worlds started like immediately after Discovery. And like my wife was like, I need a Star Trek break. We've been watching a lot of Star Trek. I'm like, that's fair. And we never circled back to it. And I was just like, it's like the original series, you know, Pike Enterprise, eye roll, you know, like whatever. And then finally we hit a lull of things to watch. So we're like, all right, let's give it a shot. And like I said, we're almost done with season two. My wife, more than anybody, is just like, let's watch it again. Let's watch another one. Let's watch another one. Like it is. Once I got over the fact that it's almost as if they, you know, if they made the Enterprise now, like you can't expect it to look like the original series. Right. So yes, it looks more modern or whatever, because it's being made now and now sensibility. And the fact that there are characters that have been cast as younger versions of themselves of characters that we know, but they're not doing impressions or not trying to, you know, like they're making them their own. And I've really turned a corner, and we talked about this a lot about like, how do you like what we talked about with Star Wars, right? Like, can you recast Luke or can you do whatever? And we're like, no, you can't. But in Star Trek, I'm now convinced you can, because what they've done is they've made, and I'm saying it because by the time this airs, I'll be done with the second season. They've made two seasons of not only fantastic science fiction, but like threaded the needle on leveraging the history of Star Trek and the Star Trek, the original series, and not even fan service or prequel explaining shit, but just adding more context to some of the stories that we know and love. Mm-hmm. Like the best example is that if you're a Star Trek fan, you know the history that they shot an original pilot where Captain Pike was the captain that didn't get picked up. Then they recast him with Shatner, that got picked up. And then later in the run, they did a two-part episode where they used the footage from the original unaired pilot.
Yep.
Right? We know that as fact. There's an episode, and this is a spoiler or whatever, but this isn't spoiling too much. There was an episode in Strange New Worlds that explained in that original unaired pilot, like Spock had a limp and somebody was bandaged and they had come off of a really bad mission. Mm-hmm. And they did an episode that gave you the backstory to understand what that mission was before the first pilot. Right. Like, so they're finding little nooks and crannies of Star Trek history to fill in the gaps and like tell and expand the story and expand the mythology. And they're doing it in such a classy, like not offensive, not overly fan service kind of way that I'm blown away by it. Honestly, it's like I right now of the modern Star Treks, I put it at the top of the list.
Well, people love it.
Yeah. It's so good. I mean, if I could recommend you to check it out, Connor, I would strongly recommend it.
I mean, I can't because they claim it's in the same continuity as the original shows, and that's laughable, so I can't support that.
No, it's not laughable. Give it a shot. Trust me. Give it a shot. No, give it a shot. I can't. You're missing out. I'm telling you.
This is another one of Connor's ridiculous rules. Ron, yeah. You have them too. And I'm sure
which I understand. But what I'm saying is that like I fought through the initial kind of like of it, you know, the number of times, Connor, I finish an episode, then immediately jump to the original series to like, oh, what was that episode? What happened there? Like to kind of connect the dots. It's like fun.
Weren't you convinced that you could recast it after the films?
After the films, once they recast them with
Chris Pine was amazing.
Exactly.
Urban. Oh
no, but what's the difference is here? And you're right. I love Carl Urban. He's amazing. The difference here was that is a different timeline.
I see.
Right. The Kelvin timeline.
That's the Kelvin timeline.
This is in continuity.
This is in continuity with the original series. Right. And honestly, it is working.
Yeah.
So
what the hell?
Yeah.
That sounds like me when, like, during the first episode of The Mandalorian, I was like, fine, I'll watch this.
Yeah.
Look at that little guy. You know, I'm in.
That's the thing. I mean, like, it's done with such, with reverence and, like, not pandering, right? Which is what you want out of it, right? You know, like, and there hasn't been a single bad episode.
Did you finish the season?
I'm three away from finishing the second season.
Did you watch the animated crossover?
We just saw that, and they even pulled that off. Like, that was done really well. They did it, Josh, there's an animated Star Trek series called Lower Decks that's done in the Rick and Morty style by the Rick and Morty guy. They did a crossover with that show where two characters from that show go through a time portal, go back in time, and end up in Strange New Worlds. And it totally worked.
Are they made into human folk?
Or they're made. Yeah,
it's actors who do the voices on the cartoon.
Yeah, including Jack Quaid from The Boys, also Dennis Quaid's son.
He's everywhere.
Thor's hammer.
Yeah. So Stranger Worlds, I strongly recommend. Like, really, like, I was reluctant. It has paid off in ways that I didn't even think it could.
That's great.
His mortgage rate was lowered. Thank you for laughing at that. I've decided that the two things that I will talk about here will both be brief, but they are also both things that Connor has already talked about. But it took a while to catch up. After like a long time of starting and stopping, I finished the latest season of The Crown. Which is a show that I don't think I like, and then I watch it for a little while, and I don't like it, and then by about halfway through the season, I'm like, I gotta get to the next one! The last season was, you know, Princess Diana and Charles.
This is the most recent one, though, Diana season. Yeah.
Right, and I guess there's another one coming out. That was supposed to be the last one.
I think it's the final one, yes.
I think I was maybe most impressed by Dominic West, who I do not... Listen, he's in one of my favorite TV shows of all time, in The Wire. I don't think he's a great actor. I never quite lose the fact that he's Dominic West, but I did in this fully. And what's really interesting about the show is that every season, these characters, who we know in real life very well, are played by different actors. And you would think it would be more jarring than it is, but it isn't. It's actually, it's really interesting. But I thought, you know, the stuff around the... how they portrayed him during the scandals and through the divorce and everything. And like, he's a little petulant, but he also kind of makes a lot of sense. It both showed, I think, something that was sort of realistic and then also sort of sympathetic. I was very fascinated that, maybe Connor, maybe you know this, but like, so Martin Bashir's horrible?
Yes.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, he had a horrible reputation. Yeah.
Wow, good thing you got to be on ABC News for a while. That's good for us.
We don't care.
You know, I thought it was fair and interesting. And well, I have no idea what it actually has to do with reality, but I feel like in that case of that show, it would behoove them very much to be as close to reality as possible.
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is. Any show is fictionalized, and you just kind of have to take the broad strokes or
but
the
like
themes.
With The Offer, like, you can sort of say, I can see why you would exaggerate in here. It would make sense. It sort of fits with the legend of the thing. But yeah, I sort of plowed through it right at the end, leaving Jack Ryan in its dust. I just was like,
you know what? I forgot about that show. And just the other day when I was watching something else on Prime, I saw it in the continue watching queue and I went, oh, right, that show.
I liked the last season, the prior season.
I love the first two seasons. This season I just not cared about at all. I just forgot
about it. I don't even remember what it was. It just wasn't working.
Could not tell you what happened to the first couple episodes.
So the other thing that I'm actually somewhat smitten with right now is 1883 Paramount Plus. My mobile phone provider decided to give me a year of it for nothing, and I said okay, and it's which is how we watched The Offer. And I start watching it, and I've never watched Yellowstone. Actually, no, I think I watched one or two episodes of Yellowstone. But
yeah, but you don't need to have watched it.
Yeah, never exactly. And it's really interesting because the show. They have a Jennifer Lawrence clone, young Jennifer Lawrence, their main actress, who's actually really good and interesting.
She's good in it.
But the thing is that there's moments where I kind of look at it and I'm like, this is like a central casting Western. It's one of the, we talked about this on our comic book show, is that sometimes you don't need to reinvent the wheel, and they're just leaning into like a Western. Like, they have Sam Elliott as a main character. Like, right there,
he's
you're
so
going,
good in it.
He is, but he's always Sam Elliott. He does that. Like, is this what he does? I gotta wonder sometimes. Like, does he get on a Western and say, like, oh shit, this again? You know, like, I don't know. But you've got to think that
as he's cashing the check,
right? No, exactly. Like, he's like, I'll grow the mustache out. Actually, here to learn his lesson after appearing without a mustache on Justified.
He really wants to do a dystopian post-apocalyptic future show. That's
the
thing.
But he would still sound. It would be like, what's that cowboy doing there? So you know, it's hard for me to think about anything that's super stand out about it. Tim McGraw is amazing.
Yeah, he's really good at it.
He's really good. I just watched the episode where it's starting to get violent and kind of scary. And so basically...
well, it hit the Oregon Trail, so it's going to get bad.
Right.
Oh,
there's all these German settlers, right? And there's they get attacked. And so they go back into town to sort of talk to the sheriff or whoever, and they're going to make him pay. And the sheriff is played by Billy Bob Thornton. So we got a little Tombstone reunion there, by the way.
Yeah.
And I was kind of watching, and it doesn't look like him because he's got like a pointy, and his weight always fluctuates. He's pretty much always skinny now, but he kind of, it took me a second, and I thought I heard his voice, but didn't. And then he said something really loud and impactful to somebody. I was like, that's Billy Bob. Because like, everyone's really like, oh, I see why he's an excellent actor. Like, he can just turn it on like that. And then that scene that follows in the saloon where just a bunch of people are shot, I was like, this is so compelling. And there's a creepy guy who's a cowboy who reminds me of Ben Foster, but isn't Ben Foster. And he wants to date the girl. And it's super fun. I guess you have to be Taylor Sheridan and be very, very successful to get away with this. It was a little while where we were getting a lot of Western shows where there was a time of what was that one with Scoop McNairy and
oh, the black and white one, right?
No.
What was the one on Netflix?
It was on Netflix, and the girl won Emmy
you're talking
for
about
it,
Netflix
and,
one, Netflix, yeah. the Netflix and the Western.
Godless, I think
Godless.
It was called.
Yeah. Godless, yeah.
It was that. There was a couple. There was that the one that.
Well, speaking of Star Trek Strange New Worlds, the one that Pike starred in, Hell on Wheels on AMC, was excellent.
I think I started that a couple times and then didn't.
It changed dramatically after the second season. They changed the whole premise. They changed everything.
Okay. Because I think I remember thinking, this looks great. And I tried to watch it and I was like, it's not getting me at all. It's like the
It
was like the Turn show, Washington Spies. I was like, this should be perfect for me. And I was like, I cannot get into it. And it sucked. But I'm enjoying those two shows a lot.
Keep watching that and then continue with 1923 after that because it's still just a Western, both Harrison Ford and Helen Mirren.
It's funny because like at this point, I've been playing through Red Dead Redemption and then Red Dead Redemption 2 again. And it's like the same time frame and setting. And I was like, oh, it's just the game. It's better than that.
I'm going to not spend a lot of time because we do have a lot to talk about in the next segment. But I'm just going to mention that right now there's like a ton of things on that I'm watching. A lot of shows have come back. I mentioned Minx last time. That season's
almost over. Oh, I meant to tell you, Connor, we just started watching season one. We're like three in. It's great.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, really good.
Justified City Primeval is almost over. Talked about that last time. The final season of Reservation Dogs is about a third of the way through. Really enjoying that. Only Murders in the Building is back, season three.
Yep.
Enjoying that. Heels is back on Stars, the wrestling show. Stephen Amell, really enjoying that. The final season of Billions is back on Showtime with Damian Lewis returning to the show after being gone for a season. Really enjoying that. Winning Time season two is back. Loving that.
Been enjoying that and continue to surprise at how much of a jerk Magic Johnson is or was.
That's the one show that when it you got now I've at least started to expect it ending, but I don't want it to. I'm like, oh no, it's the end of the episode. Right. And I was like, oh, they're gonna cut to black and it's gonna be so annoying.
I do got to say, I was like somewhat moaning going into the third episode because like I like.
I haven't watched the third one yet.
Dr. Jerry Buss.
Yeah.
Oh,
actor's name. Why am I blanking?
John C. Reilly.
John C. Reilly. Like, I like John C. Reilly in the first scene. And so far, the first two episodes, it's like him, like, meeting the girl. And I was like, I want to get back to the business stuff. And the third episode gets back to the business stuff. And I was like, all right, that's what I want. So
there was, one
good
point, I think, in the second episode where he delivered a line and all of it. And I heard John C. Reilly. Like, he's very good. There was one. Was like,
his voice broke. Yeah.
Yep. And I was like, wait a minute. I just heard John C. Reilly. And I was like, yeah, he's on this show.
I also wanted to mention that while when this show airs, the final episode of Riverdale will have aired. And God bless this fucking loony show. It's probably the end of an era. It's the end of the CW era.
Yep.
The final season of this show has been all set in the 1950s, as the original comic was. I've been loving every minute of it. They finally had the moment where they realized they're in the 50s, but they choose to stay there. This show, it would take an entire episode of this to just walk through every bonkers thing that's happened on the show. But there are several articles online. If you want to search Riverdale's craziest moments, you'll find them. It is the craziest thing that the CW has ever aired, and I really enjoyed it. The final season. I've been waiting my entire life for this final season. I've been an Archie reader since I was a little tiny kid. At the supermarket, I'd buy our double jive desk.
You've just been waiting for this moment, huh?
I've been waiting for this season because as a kid, I was like, oh, man, I just love an Archie TV show. And then they did that terrible Archie movie in the 90s. That was a backdoor pilot that nobody picked up because it was awful. Even as a 13-year-old, I knew that.
I love that at 13, you're tracking backdoor pilots.
Yeah. I used to track ratings in 13.
I believe it. Did you have a notebook of it with grid and you made a little spreadsheet?
I had it on graph paper. Because the Daily News used to publish the ratings every week.
No, I remember. Yeah, all the newspapers did, which is crazy also. Like, that.
I used to track my favorite show's ratings to see what was going to get canceled and what was not.
It was a show that you liked that had low ratings. Would you watch it and try to get other people to watch it? Or
Nothing I could do. I didn't have a box.
I'll never forget one in high school. One of my friend's house was doing Nielsen's, like not the box, but like where you write down what you watch and mail it in.
Yeah.
And me and my friend sat there and took their book and wrote in like Kids in the Hall, Twin Peaks. Like we wrote in all of our shows because we wanted to like somewhat influence it. But yeah.
Anyway, it's finally run around in jalopies and Jughead's wearing the crown. And like, this is the show I've wanted my whole life. And I'm fine with just having one season of it. That's okay.
All right.
Let these people out of Riverdale jail. They're all probably in their 30s now playing teenagers, and I'm enjoying it. Anyway, let's move on to the game.
Ding,
Josh,
ding, ding.
Tell us about the game.
It is time for the 80s comedy draft.
It's like a bad radio show. Josh, you got to explain how we got here, though.
Well, I was
the
going to.
The 80s comedy draft.
Yeah, but then the...
The audience was so excited for it, Josh.
The sound effect cut me off, and I completely lost where I was. Okay, so this is the deal. I don't remember if we teased this or not, but our thought
was... We didn't, because we made it up this morning.
Okay, so here goes... No, that not that part.
Oh.
You're going to have to let me get through this for a couple of seconds before tell me I did it wrong. It's going to take a little time. So at some point, we had decided we were going to do a show, and I'm just going to tell you, this is how we failed and didn't prepare. It's busy time. We said we're going to do a show on like summer 80s movies, like Summer School or... Yep. Others that I can't remember.
One Crazy Summer.
There you go. These types of movies. We were going to pick one and watch it. We would do an old man on movies segment like that. And then this morning, Ron said, was I supposed to watch something? And I said, is there a show tonight? And
we're pulling back the curtain, everybody.
Connor, you didn't watch anything either, right?
I didn't think it was an old man and old movie segment. I thought we were just discussing the genre.
I see. Had you prepared?
I watched Summer School about a month ago.
Okay.
Not for the show, just coincidentally.
Just as you do every summer, right?
Right. I was flipping around the TV. It had just started on HBO, and I figured, oh, what the hell? And I ended up watching the entire thing.
Mr. Shoop.
No, it's Shoop. Wait, I can't do it now. I did it very wrong. Connor has a calendar that he's been curating since he was a child, and every date has a movie or two associated with it that should be watched on that date.
Sure.
Yeah, it's on grid paper.
Went back and forth. I said, hey, when we did that TV draft, that was fun. When we programmed a Saturday night or Friday, whatever, we programmed a week of network television, primetime. And I said, let's do a summer movies draft. And then I quickly thought, I don't think there's enough of those that we could do that. And I said, well, what about 80s comedy drafts? And there was much going back and forth. And so here's how I want you to imagine it. We are each going to pick our top five 80s comedy movies. And this
we're
going
to draft five. It's not going to be our top five because obviously some of mine are going to go to you guys.
But... we can only pick it one time, so there's a draft situation, so you get what's left.
Yep.
The rules are ever-changing, and they are that it has to have been released between the beginning of 1980 and the end of 1989. It has to be, and this is fuzzy, but you're going to work with it, it has to be a pure comedy. It cannot be. So example, I would be Back to the Future. Beloved, funny movie, right in the middle of our timeline, very good, but also there's other elements. It's a sci-fi, it's a drama.
It can't be a movie that happens to be funny, but is really an action movie, like Beverly Hills Cop.
And part of it is that this is a dying genre.
Yeah.
You know, there was a time when comedies
ruled the roost.
Yeah, exactly. And like, and we were very lucky to grow up in an age of both comedies dominating the box office for years, and then the introduction of the home video rental market. You know, even pre-cable, like for me, a lot of these are like, I was trying to remember, I'm like, what movies in the 80s did I just rent all the time and watch and stuff like that?
Or I had them like copied and just watched my, you know, with the ads in the middle.
You know, my approach to this was trying to think of like the movies that I loved in this time period that were strictly comedies that, you know, like, and not so much like, for example, like I eliminated myself, like Blues Brothers and Spinal Tap, because while they came out in the 80s, I didn't appreciate those till I was much older. Right. So like I took kind of a timeless.
Wow. You're adding your own twist to your own.
Yeah. I'm taking a timeless approach where like I was exposed to them in this time period. I enjoyed them and still continue to enjoy them.
Okay. Everybody can have their own rules about what that is. However, there is another element to this game. The things I just told you that are about pure comedies, or in fact, some classics that are just too obvious to have to deal with. So if you're talking about a Ghostbusters.
I think also it's not a pure comedy.
That's fair. But either way, it's you know, it's kind of obvious.
Yeah. Right.
I think in a way. And so if someone is, I'm so scared about what's going to happen. If someone
don't
says
save
one of
it.
The,
don't do it, by the
movies
way.
For their pick. Yep. Then one of the other two can challenge. Yep.
I said, don't do it. We wanted to wait till context. Oh, man, blew it.
That's actually not the... Anyway, it doesn't matter. It's not going to be right. And then the other person can vote to reject the challenge or to ratify it, in which
it
case
it takes two to reject. How many to reject?
Takes two. Yeah, it takes two.
The other person has to agree. If the other person doesn't agree, then the movie is
And also, none of this like teaming up on the other one or just like the whole point. Like this is this is totally true.
Only a person who would want to team up to defeat somebody would say that.
Right. No. I'm just
his
saying,
natural like, inclination. His first reaction.
I'm just saying purity of cinema here. That's all we're looking for.
Yeah. Okay. So we have to decide the draft order. It's a snake draft, meaning 1, 2, 3, 3, 2, 1, 1, 2, 3, 3, 2, 1. We have to decide who's one, who's two, and who's three.
I think given that Josh explained it and this whole thing, I allow him to choose whether he wants to be first or last. Then we go from there.
I'm going to be first.
All right. So he wants first pick. All right.
So Josh is one. All right.
So hang on.
We got to figure out
the rest of us.
So Josh, now pick when you want me to go. Second or third?
You can go next, and Connor.
Okay. So then Connor, you're third. All right. But that means Connor gets to pick third and fourth.
Yeah, Connor has to find and replace. Don't do each one manually. He's working on the spreadsheet, which is, wow, has he ever? He has. He's worked on a spreadsheet while we were doing the show before. Actually, I bet he's worked on the spreadsheet lots of time when we were doing the show. We just didn't know it.
I just did it for fun. I get bored while you guys are talking. All right, so we're ready to go in the draft order. Uh-huh. So Josh is going to get the first pick in the 80s movie comedy draft.
Okay, and so my first nomination is going to be One Crazy Summer.
Whoa!
There it is.
That's the first pick in the draft. That's crazy.
Wow.
Just like that summer was.
I suspect that we will actually have quite divergent lists, although I think your lists will be more similar to each other's than mine. One Crazy Summer is, you know, that was one of those first ones that I was all about movie comedies. Maybe we all were in different ways or whatever, but like I wanted to be made to laugh. I wanted to, you know, like the comedies back then were kind of risky. Like, it's so funny with so many of these.
They would not fly today.
Oh, so many of them. We could get stuck on that for a while. And there are things that are worth saying and things that aren't. But also, like, there's a lot of them like, I saw boobs in that one for the first time. And I know that, like that's a pretty formative thing for boys in the 80s. It just is. Yeah. One Crazy Summer, though, Savage Steve Holland, I had never seen a movie with this kind of sense of humor at that point. And, I loved Bobcat Goldthwait because everybody did it at the time. I still do for different reasons.
But that's John Cusack. He was on a run of those kind of films.
He did so many great movies in the 80s. It's insane.
1986. It's a tight 1 hour, 29 minutes. Like, talk about perfect. Oh, man.
But it's just like, it's set piece after set piece. It's genuinely funny. But like they have, so I didn't understand. I saw that there were people from other things. So there was, Armstrong, Curtis Armstrong, who many people know is Booger from Revenge of the Nerds. He's in this named Ak-Ak. I didn't know what that meant then. I do now. And his dad was a Vietnam vet, because all things in the 80s were people working out Vietnam shit.
Yep.
And he's gathering landmines on the beach. That's the first. Now, that doesn't make any sense to me. I didn't understand it. I didn't know what it meant.
Doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't. Everything. It was a crazy summer.
Was that the one where he's an artist?
Yes.
He used to do the little animations. Savage Steve Holland, Josh did all, I mean, Connor did all the whammy animations from Pressure Luck.
Demi Moore, Joel Murray.
Yeah. I also like, if you look up Savage Steve Holland in Wikipedia, it says he is 60 or 62 because he was born in 1959 or 1960.
Which means
I inspired
he was a
that
kid.
Level of confusion in my Wikipedia.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
You can't do half an hour in each movie, so we got to move on.
Okay, yeah. That's my first.
Ron, those Savage Steve Holland movies, by the way, Better Off Dead, One Crazy Summer, like those
are the two.
Oh, God. That was
going to name more? There are more.
I will say there are more movies, but those are the two that really did it. That 85, 86, 1-2 combo. In high school, fantastic first date, watch a movie in the basement at one of your houses, picks.
So, right. Well, see, my thing would be that Better Off Dead, I also saw after that, but I don't think I appreciated that as much until later.
Oh, God.
Like, if you
so
watch
good.
It now, it is brilliant.
Yeah.
That's a
Better Off Dead. Well, hold on. It could be chosen later.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah.
I'm talking about for me. That's why this wasn't my first pick.
Yeah.
But Savage Steve Holland moved on to a lot of TV directing.
Yeah. That's unfortunate.
So, all right. So, for my first pick, I'm going to take the one that inspired the song. I'm going to take Summer School.
Good pick.
Classic. Wow. Mark Harmon as Mr. Shoop, the summer school teacher that doesn't want to be there, with the ragtag misfits who need to pass a test by the end of the summer, and none of them can relate to one another, and they all find a way to coexist, and they all pass the. And it's not so much that whether they passed or failed the test, because he got a 23 and now he got a 52.
They
right?
learned. Like, they learned.
They got the improvement, right? And he showed that you could really believe in students, and it really was inspiring. Chainsaw, one of the students, fantastic. The guy who went to the bathroom on the first day, then came back on the day of the test.
He scored a 92.
Yeah.
I think Summer School is the perfect movie. It encapsulates a lot of the themes of the era. It has the ragtag group of kids. It has the authority figure who doesn't want to be there but learns to love the kids. You know, it has romance. It has pregnancy. All the different sort of things. It has like snarky teenagers who are smarter than the adults. Like, it has all the stuff that you looked for back then. It's a little perfect kind of movie.
Yeah, really, really
Kirstie
good.
Alley.
Kirstie, Courtney Thorne Smith as the
pregnant teen,
the not present surfer chick, right?
She just wants the waves, man.
Yeah, exactly. She's not
pregnant teen. The other one's the pregnant teen.
No, the other one's the pregnant chick. Yeah.
Doesn't Shoop live like on the beach in Venice on a teacher's salary?
Yes.
Yeah, no, listen.
A different time.
He's selling drugs.
We know in the 80s, Venice was a very dangerous neighborhood, so it makes sense that he could afford it.
It was a different time in 1987. Mm-hmm. By the way, Summer School was directed by Carl Reiner.
Yes, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
He's in it. He's the teacher who's supposed to be the summer school teacher and quits.
Yeah, Mr. Diridorian.
Yeah.
Music by Danny Elfman and a running time of 98 minutes.
Okay.
Like, this is, they don't make movies like this anymore. It's like, it's so good.
We got to move. We got to move.
I feel an incredible amount of pressure with my first pick because there's so many. I'm just looking at my list here. There's so many different choices here, but I think I have to go with Trading Places.
Classic.
Mm-hmm.
Classic
That
comedy.
Was one of the ones we owned on VHS.
I'm not objecting this, by the way. Not a classic to be eliminated, but classic film.
I actually saw that on the list earlier. I said, Connor's going to pick that one.
Well, it was one of the ones, you know, as a kid, we had probably like 25 VHSs, either stuff that we bought or stuff we recorded off of TV.
Same.
Like that one weekend of the year where HBO was free, we would just record like as much as we possibly could. And this is one of those. I probably watched this movie 250 times, you know, in the course of my lifetime. I own the Blu-ray. I introduced it to my wife and her sister a couple of years ago. They'd never seen it. They loved it. I have to have an Eddie Murphy movie on the list.
Yeah.
I think he has to be number one on my list because he was such an important figure in my childhood TV movie.
And that explains so much.
You know, people who are not our age don't understand how big of a star he was.
Yeah, he was. Yeah.
At that time.
Yep.
And how funny he was. I think he's like something stupid, like 19 in this movie, something crazy.
Oh, he was famous and early and successful early.
And this is also like the last gasp of skinny Dan Aykroyd, who's funny and who's hilarious in it. Very early, Jamie Lee Curtis. There are also boobs in this movie, which is important in the
80s. You didn't have to
comedy.
Say, as soon as you said her name, I was like, there's boobs in that. My wife is continually like, disgusted and amazed, but I can be like, there's boobs in that. Anything before like 1990, I remember.
It was an important consideration when you were at the video store on Friday night while you were going to rent. So that's what I'm going to go with. And honestly, it took me until the last couple of years where I really dove deep on the internet to figure out what the ending meant. But I think I finally understand short selling.
All right.
I think about it all the time and whether I know what it is or not. And I feel like I get close sometimes. But
all right. So I'm going with my next pick since I have two in a row with Ferris Bueller. Too much of a classic?
I'm going to allow it.
I'm going to allow it.
Yeah.
It's almost a seminal 80s.
Yeah.
You know.
It's seminal. Like, it's teetering on the edge, right? Like
it's almost a seminal slacker.
Is
the kids too smart for the adults, you know, comedy.
I assume that if people who are slightly younger than us. I don't know at what point, but like they do not have it referenced in their head constantly.
Yeah, right.
Like we
because
do.
Because I do.
Yeah.
It's not even like a favorite movie of mine. It's not something that I watched 1,000 times. I watched it many times. But like it is always in my, every single time I watch Succession.
Yep.
Every time I hear Dankeschön.
Yeah. I mean, what I think is interesting is like part
you hear
of
Dankeschön a lot?
Sometimes.
Part of this is like what is the staying power, right?
Yeah.
And the fact that we're quoting these movies 30, 40 years later as part of vernacular, as part of language, like Josh, going back to your pick for One Crazy Summer. I mean, anytime anyone talks about being fat, I will then go, why are you so fat? Why are you so fat? Right. And it's immediately from One Crazy Summer, and someone who knows that knows, and then they get it. Right.
Were you that little kid?
No, I used to beat him up. And a lot of that has, you know, and Ferris Bueller has that saying, the number of references that you can make to anybody, and this is us being old Gen Xers, but like anybody, you can make those references and it's like, you don't even need to explain it. It just is connected.
Yep. All right, Ron, you're next.
All right, I'm next. I'm going to go with Three Amigos.
Oh!
I knew one of you was going to get that.
Sorry, Connor. I didn't mean to steal it from you.
It was a good one. It was a good one.
Possibly.
So maybe you could visit his desert island and be like, hey, can we watch that?
In the comedy pantheon, and it's ironic that we enjoyed Only Murders in the Building so much with Steve Martin and Martin Short, because young Ron and 9-year-old Ron in 1986 renting Three Amigos and seeing Steve Martin, Martin Short, and Chevy Chase playing depression era movie stars turned cowboys, turned cowboys to save a Mexican town. It is ridiculous. It was released in 1986, directed by John Landis, 103 minutes running time. So just
written by Steve Martin, Lorne Michaels, and Randy Newman.
Yep. Of all people. It is so good.
Yes.
Three Amigos is so funny. And if anybody, anytime you see anything related to El Wapo, that's, you get the reference that. Infamous, you know, like there's just so many.
Plethora.
Yeah, that's the one that a lot of people remember. Anytime, like I'll be outside in the backyard of my kids and a plane will fly by. I'm like, oh, it's a mail plane.
How can you tell?
Josh, you got two in a row now.
Oh, okay. Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Okay. Good pick. I thought about that one. I didn't put it on my list.
It's on my list.
There's a bunch of them in here that I remember being excited about that they were coming out. Like you'd see the ad and I was like, I have to see that.
It's an early connection to you getting marketed to.
Yeah. Well, no, but I think it's just that, like, you know, when you're a kid, you're looking for identity, you're looking for, you know, like someone to speak to you in a way that you think is funny, that is different or newer and whatever. And it's funny because, like, the thing that I thought was funny about it was like these surfer dudes or whatever, but it was much more subversive than that, I guess, in a way.
And it's terrific. It still holds up. We rewatched them all. We did a media split on this, actually.
Yeah, we reviewed
it again. And it holds up incredibly well.
So good. Released in 1989, 90 minutes. also... Joan of Arc was played by Jane Wiedlin of the Go-Go's.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I think the thing that I came away with, and I kind of, it was extremely positive.
Yes.
There's no villain.
Yeah.
There's no bad guy.
Yeah. And it's just about like Bill and Ted aren't trying to get over on anybody. They just want to play music. And so they're trying to, and you know what? They do a really good job on their report.
Yeah.
And
Waterloo. I'll never forget when my soccer team played a tournament in Southern California in 1990 after this movie came out, and we went to the water park that they filmed Waterloo at, and our heads were, our minds were blown. You're like, this is the water park from Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. Oh God, it was great.
And you had your little Napoleon bathing suit on.
Yeah.
Josh, what's your third pick?
Weird Science.
Oh, jerk.
Weird Science was, at least at one point, that along with One Crazy Summer were like favorite movie. Like if you said, Josh, what's your favorite movie? Daily, I will say your stewed butt wad. And then I often think, did you know he wears a bra on his head? It was so strange when all the bikers break into the house and that one weird looking guy who was in all the movies, the Energizer guy, you know, and he's like, don't tell anybody this. It doesn't affect my teaching job. Just the oddest thing. And it was like deep, like nerds. They were like full on nerds.
That was full on
socially awkward, you know, not like in Revenge of the Nerds, where they were like super stereotypical nerds. Like these I recognized as like Freaks and Geeks nerds.
Yeah.
I guess. And you know, the concept was so stupid.
Important to note, this is the second John Hughes film on this list now after Ferris Bueller.
Yeah. I don't think I remember that was a John Hughes film.
Yep.
It was like the 1985 was like one of the first ones.
Right? Anthony Michael Hall.
Anthony Michael Hall, which we know.
It's a John Hughes movie.
94 minutes.
Mm-hmm. I'm
telling you, man.
These movies are all tight.
Tight,
they needed
tight
to cycle people in and out of those movie theaters. They only showed four movies in one of them.
Ron, what's your next pick?
My next pick, I think, just kind of shows you what kind of weird kid I was. I'm going to go Clue.
I knew you were going to pick Clue.
I loved Clue. Me and my sister loved Clue. We watched it so much. So for those who don't know, Clue came out in 1985, and it was a movie based on the board game. And you had Madeline Kahn as Mrs. White, and Christopher Lloyd as Professor Plum, and Michael McKean as Mr. Green, and Martin Mull as Colonel Mustard. And it was hysterical. And what was great is I remember going to the movie theater, because at the movie theater they had a little, they had pad and pencils with the names of the characters and the weapons in the rooms, like the game. And there were three different endings, and you didn't know what ending you got when you went to the theater.
You were marketed to.
Yes, totally.
They said ending A, ending B, ending C.
Yeah. And so we went multiple times to try to get all the endings. And then finally, when they released it, they put all the endings on there. We just loved it.
How do you do that on a videotape?
They just show that at the end of the, like, they're like, back. Yeah, they go, that might have happened or could have happened like this. And then they go back to, then they roll.
Which is streaming right now. Yeah. You watch it.
I think that's how I saw it.
97 minutes, by the way. Just to note that.
Has anything cracked 90 minutes yet?
Yeah, it was.
One of them you said was 110.
But I mean, it's fantastic. Tim Curry is the butler. Like, it's just like, it was my first introduction to Tim Curry just in general and all that. And like, it was funny as a kid. And then now watching as an adult, there are jokes that I didn't get as a kid, obviously, and that are just hysterical. And it's very, very good. Clue. Big fan. Also featuring Jane Wedlin of the Go-Go's as the singing telegraph girl.
And Lee Ving.
And Lee Ving, yes. Lee Ving. And in an odd casting turn, Lee Ving of the punk band Fear.
And just, if you don't know.
If you know who Lee Ving is, it's a problem. Right,
okay, but if you.
It's problematic, let's just say.
Okay, well. But the thing is, okay, say that you've seen Clue, right? And you're like, oh, right, that's Mr. Body. I want you to Google. Or go to YouTube and find Fear in the Decline of Western Civilization.
Exactly.
And then you're going to look at that guy and go, wait, that's the – yes, it is. And I'm going to blow your mind.
Yeah. If you don't know. Or, Josh, go back and Google Fear on Saturday Night Live, and you can see young Ian MacKaye and Brian Baker and everybody moshing around them, because they brought up all the people from D.C. to watch them live, and then they were never invited to SNL ever again.
So I'm going with my third pick, National Lampoon's Vacation.
Oh, very good.
That was another one of those movies we owned that not only watched 100 times, but me and my mom and my brother would constantly just quote all the time. Yeah. And I just recently rewatched it not too long ago, and it's still very good. And Chevy Chase is up there with Eddie Murphy.
I mean, yeah, and that's why I had Three Decade. Amigos, right? He's because classic Chase. Like, he was.
Is Eddie so Murphy good. A G-Dat?
I don't remember. We haven't talked about it in so long. He's got to be.
I can't imagine that he wouldn't.
Yeah, I can't. I wouldn't argue that either.
I think they both are. I think Chevy and
definitely is.
So National Lampoon's Vacation was written by John Hughes, but directed by Harold Ramis. 98 minutes.
This is turning into a John Hughes show. I just want to say, looking at my list of remaining movies, this could continue.
I could have picked five John Hughes movies, no problem.
Unfortunately, Jane Wedlin is not in this one.
But Christy Brinkley is.
Yes, she is, yep.
Oh, the other day they were doing a vacation marathon. So they did European vacation, and then Christmas vacation, and then Vegas vacation, which I'd never actually seen Vegas vacation. So I watched.
I saw.
Was that any good?
No, that's not good. No.
Do you know when I saw Vegas vacation? When they re-released Empire Strikes Back when we were in college. After that was over, I was like, let's just go see this. So we went into that theater and watched Vegas vacation. And even free, it wasn't good.
Yeah, it's not good. And European vacation is also not really
that's
good.
That's the 90s, though. That you couldn't even.
No, I'm saying it's not. It's just, it's a weird movie.
The poster for National Lampoon's Vacation was done by Boris Vallejo.
Yeah.
Of comics fame. So.
All right. My fourth pick.
Fifth pick. That's your last pick?
No.
Fourth. You're right. Yeah. Fourth. You're right. Yeah.
Before we do the final picks, we'll recap everyone's choices.
Great.
I think you guys are going to reject this one.
I hope so.
When Harry Met Sally.
Challenge.
Is there a side effect?
Yeah, what the heck?
Thank you. All right.
It's all on you. Nora Ephron. Ron, before you make the decision, check the runtime.
Let's do that. Yeah, we should check that.
I think that's key.
Yeah,
it's definitely a comedy. It's a romantic comedy. It's in the title, but it might be too much of a classic.
I mean, 96 minutes.
Oh, ooh.
So it's tight. It's in there. No Jane Wedlin. But it does have Bruno Kirby.
I got to say, it's an excellent script.
It's an excellent movie.
It's almost too good.
It
might be the best movie on the list.
I'm going to reject it as well, because I feel like where Ferris Bueller was teetering on the edge, this pushes it over, because from my personal perspective, I wasn't watching this in 1989 when it came out.
My mom was.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right.
Let's hear the sound effect, sir.
I forget which sound effects it's supposed to be.
The one that hasn't been used yet, the last one to go. No, the other one. No.
He was supposed to use the music.
The music.
No, that was when that was supposed to happen when the challenge happened.
Oh, I see.
I need to rename any of the things because the thing stopped working. It's a whole problem.
All right, do it back.
I'm going to go with Better Off Dead then. Better Off Dead.
All right.
Okay.
I loved One Crazy Summer, but Better Off Dead was my Savage Steve film. Yeah. That was the one we watched all the time. That was the one we quote all the time. I can't hear the word $2 without hearing it. You know, the street value of this mountain, all these, all the things.
That's so good. Go that way. Turn left.
No, it's you go that way.
Go very, very fast.
If something gets in your way, pause.
Turn.
Inspiring words from a man who knows how to ski. Yeah. Why were two Japanese men? They were Japanese. They weren't Japanese Americans. They were Japanese men.
They were learning English from Howard Cosell.
Dressed in ABC sports jackets in a hatchback with speakers on top, while one of them spoke exactly like Howard Cosell, narrating things that happened.
That's how they learned English. Road. That's what they said.
Some friends of mine in high school and college had a band called Charles DeMar. which I always thought was a great band name. That was fantastic. 97 minutes runtime.
Doesn't feel it.
The theatrical poster was done by Drew Struzan.
Yeah.
Also of comics fame. So.
It's a real shame when folks be throwing away a perfectly good white boy.
Yep. I like how it says Lane also regularly encounters two Korean drag racers who speak in Japanese.
Wait, so they're Korean? They're Korean. But they speak Japanese. So I wasn't wrong about what they were speaking.
Right. No, they were talking, okay. But they were Korean. Speaking Japanese, one who learned to speak English by listening to Howard Cosell. Oh, that's so good. Better off dead.
Franz dressing.
All right. Franz bread. And to drink, Peru.
Ron's fourth pick.
Early in the 80s, 1980. Ooh. It set the tone for this style of film. Me and my sister watched it endlessly on VHS. I'm going to give it to Airplane.
I was going to guess that. Yep.
Oh, fair.
Oh, my God. Airplane.
I feel like in my mind, it's a 70s movie.
It came out in 1980.
I get it, but it's just...
Airplane starts the decade, Naked Gun ends the decade.
It's like 70s smart.
It is 70s smart. Yeah, but they did Airplane 2, then they did Top Secret, which almost made my list. Top Secret is going to be like 6 yeah. or 7. Top Secret is so good, right? The Zucker brothers, and eventually Naked Gun is really where they blew up and stuff like that. And you're right, it is kind of 70s humor, but it did come out in 1980. 87 minutes.
Whew.
Which
tight.
Also, I know we haven't gotten into box office as much, but the movie cost $3.5 million and it made $171 million.
Yeah,
and to this day, whenever I'm in a rough spot at work, I go, oh, I picked the wrong week to stop sniffing glue. And it is all about Lloyd Bridges and Steve McCroskey in this film.
It's a classic. Yeah. Oh, is it too much of a classic, Josh?
I got to say that...
Josh, no, it's too much of a classic.
No, I don't know. Okay. I'm not challenging that. It's right. I mean, you're going to say that's not a comp. Like it's hard to.
Yeah.
That is
I'm not saying it's not a comedy. But it's too much
also,
of a classic.
What were my parents doing letting me watch this?
Well, this is a question. Can
not
be,
having to parent you for 97 minutes.
True. Yeah. 87 minutes.
I think there's not a lot of movies today that could get away with pedophile jokes.
Oh my God.
Any of it.
I drive my wife crazy. There's a problem in the cockpit. What is it? It's the little room where the pilots fly the plane, but that's not the point. Like, I do that joke all the time.
Do you
get these people
Gladiator?
To the hospital? What is it? It's a big building of sick people, but that's not the point.
like you like Gladiator movies, Billy. It's so fucking funny.
It's so
wrong.
Yep.
Do you speak jive?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Well, the whole thing with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, right? That whole scene. But also, like...
I'm the co-pilot.
But what I do like...
Roger.
What I do like about the movie, though, is that it is broken up into three acts, really, like so cleanly and plainly, in that, like, it's the pre-plane takeoff, then the plane takes off, then the thing happens, and then it switches to the tower where they're going to land. And then all of a sudden, you get introduced to a whole new cast in the last third of the movie, including Johnny. With Johnny, what do you make of this? Ooh, I can make a brooch, or
can't be gay man.
Yeah, like out of like 2/3 into the movie, like we don't see Lloyd Bridges until the end of the movie, and he steals the show. Like, oh, it's so good.
Josh, your fourth pick. Don't make your fifth until we do the recap.
Yeah, that's fine. Beetlejuice.
Flag.
I'm gonna get.
I mean, so according to. That was great.
That was the wrong clip. That was the wrong clip.
No, that was correct.
It's a little very mellow flag.
So, according to Wikipedia, Beetlejuice is a 1988 American fantasy horror comedy film.
I think it's more of a horror than a comedy.
I do too.
I will
note though that it's 92 minutes.
I think anything over 90 is like a check against at this point. There's so many funny things in it.
Sorry. Sure,
I mean Michael Keaton's Cop is one of the funniest movies I've ever seen, but it's an action movie first.
So wait a minute. So Connor, I flagged it. Do you agree?
I agree.
All right, okay. Hit the buzzer.
Here's another one. If there's a delay. Okay. Police Academy 2, their first assignment.
Whoa, the second one.
That's the one I saw in the theater.
It's a good one.
Yeah. You know, it had everything that one would want from an 80s comedy. It was bawdy. It was silly. It had every possible stereotype.
What was the premise of that one? They were on the streets.
It's their first assignment.
They had graduated, and then they had like auxiliary, like other training guys. I think they had like a blue, like they were like probationary kind of cops, I think, out there. Hmm. It's the first one I saw.
What year was this?
This is 1985, Connor, March 29th, 85.
So I saw that when I was 8 in the theater. Yep. Boobs right in the beginning. Lady on the beach sits up. okay. You know what's interesting, though, is that I actually watched through a couple of these relatively recently. And what I sort of found was is that the protagonists, your Gutenbergs and your Michael Winslow, they were kind of on the right side of – there were a lot of like – ethnic stereotypes and things like that, but they were on the right side of where you would want them to be. So like the joke isn't that they sent the jerky cops to the gay bar, the Blue Oyster, which is
the music so I can hear
fucking funny, but it was that it made those guys uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It wasn't making fun of the dudes in that bar. Those insecure guys were in there and didn't want to be there because they were homophobic and awful. The gay guys were just in there dancing and having a good time.
Yep.
I had no idea that there were actually dudes like that and they were into it. And it's totally cool.
Yeah.
At the time, I thought Michael Winslow was the single greatest thing
I could see
ever.
I could see that.
I was so, you know, and I would try to do it. I was terrible or whatever, but he fascinated me. You know, Gutenberg is like, he was, you know, like, he's like Mark Harmon in Summer School. He's just, yep. You know.
He's a straight man.
The rapscallion. No, but he's like, he's a rapscallion.
Right, but he's still the straight man to the really crazy people around him.
He is, but at the same time.
He's like, the Bill Murray.
Yes. Yeah. You know, that's sort of the template. And, you know, it's funny because I just remember my whole childhood. I almost chose Citizens on Patrol. Which is number Cop. 4, because it had all the skaters in it.
So that came out when we were 10. Mm-hmm. So we had a movie theater like 3 blocks from our house. So we went to the movies all the time. And we must have gotten the time wrong. So we walked into the theater and it was already playing. So we thought, oh, we just missed the first couple of minutes. So we sat down to watch it. It was me and my mom, my brother, who my brother was probably 7. And the movie ended within 30 minutes.
Now that's a runtime.
It was playing on multiple screens. We'd gone to the wrong screen. So then we just sat there through the cleaning of the theater and then rewatched until the part we walked in and then we left it.
Nice.
And so we saw it.
Well done.
The last 30 minutes first, and then the first hour second.
I do want to comment that the theatrical poster was also done by Drew Struzan.
Hey there.
And this has a Police Academy 2, the first assignment, has a runtime of 87 minutes.
There you go. Ugh. And let's not forget, and I can't remember his real name, but he was Henry Warnemont from Hunky Brewster as the Commandant, who would, every time he would say something, he would say, it was very, 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 very good, which I still think is hilarious.
All right, so before we get to our final picks, just a rundown of the picks so far. Ron's movies are Summer School, Three Amigos, Clue and Airplane, two films with exclamation points in the title.
You got to love the punctuation.
Josh's four films up to now are One Crazy Summer, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, Weird Science, Police Academy 2, Their First Assignment. And mine first four films are Trading Places, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, National Lampoon's Vacation, and Better Off Dead. So now here are the final picks.
Can I quickly add, while you're doing this, can I add up the box office for all of them and add them up to see who wins?
And you can.
I mean, you should put the box office and the runtime.
I've got the runtime.
I have Bobcat Goldthwait in two of mine.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
All right, Josh, your final pick.
It's tough.
It's tough because it's the last one. There's so many choices.
It's tough.
I think I'm gonna chance it. I'm gonna say this is Spinal Tap.
I eliminated that from my list, like I said, because I discovered that when I was much, much older. I never watched it in the summers.
I discovered it earlier, and the older I get, and the more that I.
It's certainly a film you quote all the time. Not you, but I mean people.
Yeah,
we do.
Know me. It just got better every time. And then you see that. I mean, it's the what's it called?
Fernwood Tonight.
Fernwood Tonight. You know, like that comedy style, which came out of the.
Ron, did Airplane make $171 million?
Yes, it did. Didn't you hear me say that when I said it earlier?
That's pretty impressive. Yeah. That straight deadpan comedy stuff, but the whole thing is a comedy. Every single thing that happens is funny.
I mean, Christopher Guest, I think, is one of like an underrated comic genius. And the chemistry between him and McKean and Shearer are just like the way they play off one another as those three characters is just legend. It's so good.
I didn't even understand any of the jokes. Like, I just keep get them more and more and more as time goes on. Like, it kept getting funnier. You know, at first it didn't matter what Nigel was saying because he's, you know, you get a little chapeau shop. Oh, that looks good. That does. Like, I thought that was funny. But later, you know, like Jazz Odyssey gets really funny, or Boston's not a good college town. But you could laugh before, like, they got lost backstage. Like, there's so many things, yep. You know. It's great. It made $4.70.
I would like to note, yeah, Connor messed with the spreadsheet while I was working on it. I would like to note that it has a runtime of 82 minutes, which it definitely feels much longer than 82 minutes.
It does, and not in a bad way. Just like you get your money.
I still say, especially at work, to underlings beneath me, I say, hey, mime is money.
And then you put the window up.
Yep. Ron, your last pick.
Well, I'm trying to decide now if I've... Because I've
played the mime. Do you know who I played the mime?
Dana Carvey and Billy Crystal. I'm trying to decide if I pick one that I think I could steal from you, Connor, but I don't want to play that game. So I'm going to go with Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home.
That's not a comedy.
Challenge.
But it does have Jane Wedlin in it.
I not only do I challenge it, I think that we should kick him out. I think he's disqualified.
He's gone.
You trapdoored him.
That was great. No, my real last pick, though. I'm trying to bet whether or not I steal it from you. I'm going to let you have it. Although if you don't use it, I'm going to feel bad.
There's lots of choices.
Then I'm going to go. I'm going to go my gut, whether it steals it from you or not. Real Genius. Did I steal it from you?
You didn't necessarily. So it's on my list of multiple movies.
Okay.
I haven't figured out yet.
So I'm going to go Real Genius, Val Kilmer vehicle from 1985. It does break our format here because runtime of 106 minutes.
Whoa. So
a little longer than an hour and a half, but not 2 hours, thankfully.
Jesus.
Real Genius was we rented this so much and watched it all the time. And it was just like so. And it was funny because like you had science going back to your pick, Josh, but Weird Science, there was this year of nerdy science comedy movies. Yep. And for whatever reason,
which is in no way based in science.
For whatever reason, I aligned with Real Genius more than I did Weird Science. That's the one I kind of related to more. I don't know if it was Laszlo or what. God, this movie is just so funny and so good. It's just so good.
It's interesting that we're having this conversation because I'm looking at our list. In the last 2 months, I've watched Summer School. I've watched Real Genius. I've watched Airplane. I've watched Vacation. I've watched at least 4 of these movies in the last 2 months.
I'd like to also point out that Ron keeps saying we rented this so many times, and you might be thinking at home, if you're younger, why didn't you just buy it? And there's a very good reason for that.
Because they were very expensive.
In the old days, if you wanted to buy a VHS, it was priced prohibitively to protect the
monopoly.
Basically, like you couldn't buy it. You had
it was like $80 or $90.
Quite often $99.99. I remember because I wanted to buy it.
To rent it.
That's in mid-80s money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's very expensive.
Yeah.
Although at some point they must not been because we certainly bought some, not a ton, but we had some.
It crossed over the 90s. Once the mall stores that sold VHS tapes really broke through, like 93, 94, when the prices dropped, but all through the 80s, you could not buy a VHS tape. It was too expensive.
I think it was like a special occasion gift, like birthday or Christmas. Be like, oh, here's, you got Beverly Hills Cop.
look who's living the life. Jeez. In your Manhattan apartment getting VHS movies.
But also, I think people understand the culture of the video store, the Friday night trip to the video store.
Oh, my God. It was the best. It was just the best.
I had Video Connection down the street from me, which was independent one that we'd go to all the time.
Friday night or Saturday night, me and my friends would go to the video store and you'd walk the aisles and you'd look and to see and everything like that. And when my video store closed, and it was like, I want to say the video store I went to, I don't remember what year it closed. It was the 90s. It was definitely like late 90s. So like when Blockbuster put them out of business, they sold all the VHS tapes. And I went in and bought one VHS tape that I rented there so much that I needed to own it. Can you guys guess what movie?
Rad.
Yes. Wow.
Notice how little time I had to think about. I was thinking and I went, I have it. Yep. It was beautiful. That's nice work.
Yep. And I still have it.
My abiding memory of video stores is that I go with my mom, and her and I have never liked the same thing ever. So it was always frustrating.
Right. Well, how many did you rent? Usually it was like one for me, one for you.
I don't know. We were poor. Probably one. We were probably trying to find something we could watch, but we didn't ever like the same things.
Also, fun fact, my wife worked at that video store in high school. We weren't married at the time, but it was still, you know.
One day I returned a tape and got back to my house. Again, it was just on the block, so I could be there within 30 seconds. Yeah. And I get a phone call as soon as I walk in the door, and it's the video store. And the guy's like, do you own Let's Go Mets?
You told me this story.
I had, because you could constantly put movies in and out of the VHS tape. And so they're all just sitting there. And I picked up the wrong tape and put it into the box to return it. So I'd given him my Mets highlight tape.
Just so everyone's clear, everyone who lived in the New York metro area had a copy of Let's Go Mets from 1986. I had that video. Like, we all had it. It was great. I think they gave it away at games in 87.
Yeah.
All right, Connor's final. All right,
so my last pick is tough because I'm looking through my list and I don't see any representation of Bill Murray. I don't see any Michael Keaton.
It's tough.
I don't see any Tom Hanks.
I thought about Mr. Mom. I did.
Yeah. It's tough. I could also easily go Mel Brooks here.
I thought about History of the World. That was one we watched a lot as kids in the summers.
I assume that Princess Bride will get bounced off the list.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
When Harry Met Sally gets bounced.
Yeah, I gotta bounce that. I'm sorry.
It's also a fuzzy genre.
Right.
It's
fantasy.
Pure comedy.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming we're going to say Big's not a pure comedy.
No, there's a lesson.
No, it's a drama.
Yeah, it's a drama, yeah. Which, by the way, my sister just watched that with my 20-year-old niece who's never seen it before.
Fuck off. Sorry.
And she was like, it was really inappropriate. I mean, like, he's that woman is like a businesswoman. She's taking advantage of him. I'm like, well, she didn't know. It's like, that's why it's funny. Youth is wasted on the wrong people.
Not like an airport or airplane.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to go with... This is tough. I have several films. It could be Uncle Buck. It could be Spies Like Us. It could be Mr. Mom.
It's Hume and Milbarge.
But I've already got an Aykroyd Landis comedy on there.
You gotta go with your gut.
Man. Go with your gut.
What made 11-year-old Connor laugh like a motherfucker?
I went with my gut.
Well, all these movies did.
But what you got left?
Dude, I'm going to have to go Spaceballs.
Good call.
I was talking about this whole podcast with my sister earlier because I was like, what movies did we watch as kids and all this sort of stuff? And she said Spaceballs, and I texted right back to her, I'm a prince. And then she sent me back a laughing emoji.
I mean, pizza's going to send out for you, like, merchandising is where the real money in the movie's made. Like, all of that stuff is burned in my brain.
For some reason, when John Candy, they said, what's your full name? And he said, Bartholomew. I thought that was the funniest shit. I have no idea why. I don't know.
96 minutes run.
Yeah, you're beating me to, you're stealing my thunder.
So
though,
no one's going with Ice Pirates, huh? All right, fine.
No.
Space Herpes.
Ludicrous Speed. Another one is like, well, that was then. This is now. Well, when is now?
That was then.
Like, that stuff is still all stuff I say all the time. That's got to be Spaceballs. It's got to be Mel Brooks, too, because that just obviously wasn't an 80s movie. We watched Blazing Saddles all the time.
Yeah.
Another one I just watched recently. All right. So there you go.
I'm going to ask one thing.
Do we get one alternate?
I was going to say, does anybody want to change one out or get an alternate?
Well, alternate would be we have to pick an alternate. I'm happy with my list.
I'm happy with my list. I mean, I can give my
give an alternate.
My next one. Not an alternate, but the next one.
Okay. Yeah.
Inner Space.
Good one. Oh,
Martin Short again?
I love it.
Martin Short, but I gotta challenge that. That's more of an action.
Yeah, I feel like it's sci-fi movie. Action. Yeah.
Wow. Really?
It was certainly marketed that way.
Yeah. Wikipedia says science fiction comedy.
Yeah.
All right, fine.
I don't know.
Then my other backup was Little Shop of Horrors. That musical?
Musical comedy doesn't necessarily knock it off.
I didn't like it.
Well, that's not the choice. It's
question. I know. I love that. So I don't really know.
Yeah.
You're like a Steve Martin.
I love Steve Stan. Martin.
Hey, Steve dude. Martin's the best.
Yep. All right, so what's your backup, Josh? Or alternate?
Now, I'm conflicted about it because it's quite rapey.
Nerds.
Revenge of the Nerds was...
I thought about for a moment because it is funny.
It's very funny. And again, other than the rapiness, what we consider to be clear sexual assault now.
Right. I mean, clearly.
Which is tough to get by.
Right.
But in terms of the, like, just being so funny.
Oh, it's very funny.
I mean, just Booger alone.
Yep.
Again, many racial stereotypes. What the fuck is a frush? I mean, I loved it. And obviously, a lot of nudity.
Connor, what's your alternate?
You've already picked that one. Back to School.
It's a good one. That's straight up comedy.
Love that
very
one.
Very good.
Ronnie Dangerfield, Robert Downey Jr., Emmett Walsh. Also, Johnny from Karate Kid.
Yeah.
Playing one of his signature 80s Zapka. Asshole roles. Yeah. Billy Zabka.
My deep cut pick was going to be Monster Squad.
That's not a...
Wolfman's got nards.
So in terms of the competition, for box office, Connor wins with $300 million total at the box office.
Unsurprising.
Mainly buoyed by the powerhouse of Trading Places, which made $120 million, and Ferris Bueller's made $71
million. Those top three made a lot.
In second place is me with $274 million, purely on the shoulders of Airplane's $171 million. Mm-hmm. And Josh, you got $212 million at the box office, with Police Academy 2 being the highest grossing film at $115 million. And as far as runtime goes, we're all in agreement that 90 minutes is the sweet spot, right? So The average runtime winner is Josh with 88.4 minutes.
There you go.
Followed by me with 98.2 minutes, and then Connor with an average runtime of 102 minutes.
You could almost watch these during a lunch hour.
Yes. Oh, 100%. Sure. 100%. I mean, Jesus Christ, there's like that. Like Spinal Tap is 82 minutes. Police Academy is 87 minutes.
I can't believe that. And they even put jokes in through the credits. So that's a win.
Yeah. Oh.
Is it a surprise to anyone that the movies that I picked were apparently the things that audiences liked the least?
No, it's not a surprise. another pick.
You had a bona fide box office smash, and you had two solid grossers.
You had two decent grossers.
I can't believe Police Academy did $115 million in 80.
Yeah, that's crazy.
That's $88.
Yeah. $85. Yeah. I'm not adjusting for inflation.
I'm going to do it just to see because I'm curious.
Here we go. We got to do the year and then, oh, man.
Like Police Academy 2, it did better than any movie in 5 years.
What's $115 million.
Oh, are you using usinflationcalculator.com?
I'm using the West Egg one. I like that
one. For 1980, then in 2030.
These two guys have go-to inflation calculators.
Yeah. You got to have it. I put the wrong number.
Airplane in 1980 dollars adjusted for inflation for 2023, $171 million in 1980 dollars is $634 million in 2023 dollars. That's more than Oppenheimer.
No, Oppenheimer's at $700. Okay. That's still pretty amazing.
Is that all time?
No, it's just a box office run.
Right, it's just the box. Okay, yeah. So when it was in the theater, which was more or less within the calendar.
It's not counting the, you know, the
ancillary. But think about, that's a Stone Cold classic.
Yeah.
Police Academy 2, $320 million in today's money.
Can you imagine a comedy doing that?
That's insane.
A sequel comedy.
It's insane. And it's like, Hangover also, 2. How many of these are R-rated versus PG, by the way, too? That's a good question.
A lot of them are PG and shouldn't have been.
Yeah.
Well, cause, several are.
Well, because there was that, there was apparently there was this, like, this year there was a R-rated comedy with Jennifer Lawrence that came out, right? That like, as far as I can tell, did nothing.
I think the difference is that back then, kids got to see them.
What is it called?
It's because people don't go to the theater.
What was that movie called again? Anymore. What was that one called?
The one that just came out?
Yeah, it's not in the top 25 of this year, yeah.
No, it's not. It did okay, but it didn't do that great. Yeah. It's called No Hard Feelings.
Right, because comedies just don't do anything anymore.
They don't play.
Yeah.
It made $86 million. It's just not terrible.
Yeah.
In my mind, I mean, I know there have been funny movies and people, like the last great comedy that I saw in a theater was Role Models in 2008.
Yeah.
Like when I say great, like it, we like it
that
was
movie really resonated with you. Funny. You keep bringing that up.
Yeah. No, I didn't like The Hangover. I didn't, you know, there's funny stuff after that. Game Night was great.
It's just that that was the one genre that the streamers were successful in converting people in their heads, which is so strange to me because part of the fun of seeing a comedy is laughing with other people in the theater.
Yeah,
it's true.
Like movies are much funnier when there's 100 people laughing around you than you're by yourself chuckling on your couch.
Here's the difference. If it's edgy now, people maybe don't feel as comfortable laughing in public.
Yeah.
I don't know.
See, also this is the problem with I was just looking for like recent comedies and Rotten Tomatoes has a list of the 50 best comedies of the 2010s. And like number two is Frances Ha.
What is that?
That's the Greta Gerwig, Noah Baumbach directed. It's an indie movie.
Is that this is greatest?
And also,
like according to ratings,
Blue Jasmine is on the. Oh wait, I'm sorry. It's a reverse list. This is from 50 down. That's not the top. The very.
That's not a comedy,
right? But that's what I'm saying. Like it doesn't. According to Rotten Tomatoes, the number one comedy of the 2010s was Booksmart.
That was very funny.
It was very funny. Yeah,
it was, but nichey.
Well, yeah, but still funny.
I know, but like, I don't know. Do you think that somebody who is
no more or less niche than the Michael Cera?
Here you go. The number eight comedy of the 2010s is Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri.
What?
Well, right, but say that you're 14 and you see Booksmart in the theater. Are you quoting that 40 years later?
Maybe. I don't know.
Possibly.
Really?
It might resonate with 14-year-olds.
I don't know. I feel like not, but I don't know.
Yeah. The comedy thing is weird because it kind of went away in the 90s and then had the American Pie resurgence, right? And then you had a nice run in the early 2000s. Old School, Dodgeball, like all those movies, right?
The old version.
Yeah. And then it just something changed.
I think it went long tail theory. I think that they used to make comedies for really big audiences and there was a way to do that. And it wasn't to make them smart necessarily. It was to make them... you know, body and big set pieces, you know,
I don't know if I agree with that. Look, we all have our theories. I think it's that people only go to the theaters now for events and comedies aren't events. They're smaller movies that people say, I don't need to see that in the theater. I can see it at home, but it's not an Avengers movie.
Cause The Hangover was considered an event. I mean,
that was way before its streaming. So that was
I know that, but I'm just saying, but like, I remember that being an event movie, right? Like that was everyone's like, you got to go see this.
But like, do you remember we all went and saw Borat together?
Mm-hmm.
In a theater, which was a Queens experience, but like everybody laughed together. Like I can't help but think that going to see something in a setting like that, and Connor says this a lot about the experience of seeing things together, and I don't always agree with it, but in terms of comedy, I think that makes you laugh more. It gives you a better experience.
Something you might chuckle at home on the couch is something you'll laugh your head off if everyone around you is laughing your head off.
Yeah. The group experience of watching a comedy is like that.
You're like going to see stand-up in a crowd as opposed to...
Right. Yeah. Now, someone might say, does that mean the movie is as funny as...
Doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. It's the experience that you're having.
And that laugh will stick with you because whatever it is that you saw in the theater that made you laugh that much then is going to make you laugh that much as you go on through time, whether or not you saw it at home or there, like if it makes it better.
There's an article in Time Out from last week that's the 100 best comedy movies, the funniest films of all time. And number one is This Is Spinal Tap. Number two is Airplane.
All right.
Number three is Monty Python's Life of Brian.
They imagine we have these armadillos in our trousers.
Number four is Annie Hall. Number five, Groundhog Day. Number six, The Jerk. Oh, The Jerk is so good. I love Steve Martin.
We have to do 90s ones sometime.
We'll do 90s ones next.
All right.
We have to wrap this show up.
It's yes, we do.
50% longer than a normal show. All right. So there's our 80s movie draft.
only 50% longer, Josh.
Wait, what's the runtime? We got to nail this at 90 people.
Yeah. Can we come in at a solid 92?
Well, actually, we fucked around so much in the beginning, we're probably actually way under. So recapping it, Ron's picks are Summer School, Three Amigos, Clue, Airplane, Real Genius, his alternate is Little Shop of Horrors, Josh's is One Crazy Summer, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, Weird Science, Police Academy 2, Their First Assignment, This Is Spinal Tap, alternate is Revenge of the Nerds. And mine is Trading Places, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, National Lampoon's Vacation, Better Off Dead, Spaceballs, alternate is Back to School.
I would like to note that Connor changed the font of the spreadsheet to something with serifs, and I just changed it back to one with sans serif.
Jesus Christ. I was noticing it like getting formatted left and right for no fucking reason, because nobody's ever going to look at this again.
That's not true. In the past, we've taken screenshots of the
we can show this to the people. Okay. Like, sure. If you want an insight into the madness.
So there you go. So that's our episode. We'll be back next month with another episode of Media Explode. Until then, though, you can always hear Josh and I talk about the week's comics on the Pick of the Week show. You can hear Ron on his new show. When does that air, Ron?
It comes out every Tuesday night. It's called Android Faithful. You can go to androidfaithful.com. Please subscribe. Tell your friends if you're into Android phones. It's the best show on the internet.
And we'll be back next time. Until then, I'm Connor.
I'm Ron.
I'm Josh.
Here I go again on my own. Going down the only road I've ever known. Like a drifter, I was born to walk alone. I've made up my mind. I ain't wasting no more time.
I'm Josh.
I was trying to think of an airplane joke to do, and I couldn't.
The entire time, and I was like, Emmett Fitzhume. Damn it, that's what I should have said. Molly Russell's wart.
Trading Places is number 16 on this list. Oh, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
That was on my short list.
I thought that was too much of an
adult.
That shit's funny.
It's a great comedy. I just don't know if it was too much of a non-comedy.
I don't know. There's so many gags. It's so ridiculous.
It's probably a pure comedy. I could have chosen that one.
It's comedy, but at the end they stick a button on it as being emotional. But
Bridesmaids was a big hit.
That was funny. I saw that in the theater. That was really funny.
Yeah. Oh, Blazing Saddles.
That's the 70s, though.
I know. Yeah. Well, just look at this. This is an all-time list. This is just, yeah.